Okay, so go ahead.
Hi, I'm State Representative Attica Scott, and I serve Kentucky House District 41 in Jefferson County. It stretches from east to west, all the way to St. Matthews and to nearly Chickasaw Park in the West End.
Thank you for joining us again. This is the second, you're our first repeat guest on Community Conversations. We were talking a couple weeks ago about racial disparities and COVID-19. And now we are coming back to talk about another big racial disparities question, which is not totally unrelated. I think, you know, what's been going on with COVID-19 has been a factor in exacerbating a lot of underlying tensions. But I know you've been on the front lines of some of the protests in Louisville following the death of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience there?
Sure. So most of the actions and the resistance have occurred in District 41, and truly from downtown to the East End to the West End. And so I wanted to make sure that I showed up in each of those spaces. On Friday, my daughter and I joined up with my friend Shamika, who we were on the live the last time together, to go to the action on Friday. And Mike, I just have to tell you that for 5 hours, we were there in a loving, peaceful, caring environment. I mean, to the point where when cars would try to drive through the line of people who were out resisting, they would be met with Black men who would say to the driver, "We love you, but you just can't come this way." That's how they were. That's how they were addressing people, with nothing but love.
That's amazing. And so for that first 5 hours too, what was the police presence like?
So of course, unfortunately, but expectedly, they had their snipers on the rooftops of buildings. We saw that. They weren't visibly present where we were at 6th and Jefferson as much as they were downtown by the Yum Center. But then when the folks were at the Yum Center started marching down to where we were at 6th and Jefferson, that's when the increased police presence was visible, as well as not only LMPD, but state police as well.
Before you were in the legislature and you were on Metro Council, and before that, you were an organizer with Jobs with Justice. So you've been involved in activism in one sense or another for a long time, as long as I've known you. And I've been at a lot of protests, you know, over the last 20 years. I cannot remember, and maybe I'm totally drawing a blank, but I cannot remember any time in 20 years when there's been this kind of police response to protests in Louisville. Usually you see like all these other cities are having these riots and things, and Louisville always stays peaceful. And I think that's somewhat because of the people who are organizing, and somewhat I think that's, there's some credit at least in the past to LMPD that they usually don't escalate the situation. So my first question, am I remembering that wrong, or is that the case?
I mean, I would say for the most part, yes, of course they were destructive during Occupy Louisville, and definitely not a compassionate element of our society.
That's the big exception, I think, was Occupy Louisville. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so in this case, I just, my mind is boggled, and it's like they are meeting the violence that they heaped upon Breonna and Kenneth Walker with more violence towards people who are being peaceful. And I just don't understand. There's no explanation for it to me. And I will say that I also feel like when the state police came in, that escalation was hyped up even more, you know?
I was wondering if that was some of the difference, was that you had LMPD that's dealt with similar situations a lot. And then maybe with the state police coming in, you're having different people that are new in this approach or new situation or whatever, for whatever reason, were more quick to start hitting people and shooting tear gas. I don't remember tear gas at any protest in like 20 years.
I don't remember it at all. Not in Louisville. And also, you know, these state police aren't people that we'll see at the gas station or grocery store for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. We don't worship together. Our kids don't go to daycare together or school together. So I think there's that element too, where it's like, I'm not accountable to these people, right?
And also, and maybe I'm wrong here, I don't know the exact demographics, but LMPD, Louisville Metro Police Department, there's a lot of African-American officers, there's a lot of women officers, and I don't know if that's the same case with the state police, if that's some of the reasoning as well, maybe. The people that feel, people are from Louisville, they feel a connection to the community, they're part of the Black community, you know, that all of those things are going to work towards being more patient. I don't know what the difference has been. Let me ask you for the situation, and I know you were down there Friday. I don't know if you were there other days as well. Did you see when the violence started? I don't know if that's the right word to use or not, but you know, when things escalated, were you a witness to that?
Yes, my goodness. So as I said, we were there for 5 hours. I'm there with my teenage daughter. I've got multiple videos of her participating in actions, laying on the ground, holding her hands up. And we marched, and we marched around the block and marched around LMPD headquarters. Nobody touched it. Not one person touched LMPD headquarters. We marched around peacefully, and the crowd wrapped around the block. It was so huge. And then as it began to get dark is when we saw police lining up, and they were hitting their bats in their hands, like they were ready to go to war with us. And I'm standing there like, what is happening? When did things de-escalate with them? It wasn't with us. They just quickly, or not de-escalated, escalated with them. They quickly escalated with us. Interestingly enough, my daughter's car was parked exactly where they were lined up, because we rode together. And so she was like, her, you know, immediate response was, if they hit my car. So, you know, we go and check on her car, and then I'm going live on Instagram, and I'm walking up to where they are, and I immediately saw an officer make a beeline directly for me. He never said a word, Mike. He just pushed me, shoved me multiple times without saying a word. Now, you know me, I'm 5 foot tall. Mike, are you kidding me? This person had to be over 6 feet, baton in hand, gun on waist, pepper spray on waist, and you're pushing and shoving me for no reason without even saying a word. Never once uttered a word to me. And then within 10 minutes, Mike, boom, bam, cannons going off and smoke everywhere. And I want folks to know I was separated from my daughter. And that was one of the scariest times of my life, because she was literally across the street, but I could not see her because that smoke was so bad. My throat and my eyes were getting affected. So I had to cover up. I couldn't see. I had to run. I had to duck and try to hide because I was afraid I might get shot with actual bullets. And I didn't know where my daughter was.
It's terrible. I mean, it sounds like that's consistent with what I've heard from so many people, that these are just, there's no warning. There's no, you know, order to disperse or anything. There's just a sudden, you know, outburst of violence by the police. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, saying that makes it sound inflammatory, but it's like, that's what's been described consistently, is that the police are starting these altercations with apparently no reason, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing we've heard from the mayor, we've heard from a couple other people, is this idea that there are outsiders coming mm-hmm. in to instigate things. Have you seen any of that? Is that same old myth we've heard for all these years, or is there some truth to that?
Well, LMPD called me an outside agitator when I went to Ferguson to stand with folks when Mike Brown was murdered by police. So I know what that's like and what that's designed to do. Because even if they were folks who were from outside of Louisville or even outside of Kentucky, there were people who were showing up in solidarity. Mm-hmm. I will say, because I want to be honest, that I saw 3 water bottles. And these are plastic water bottles, plastic bottles you get at the grocery store with water in them, that were thrown at officers. Water in a bottle. That's plastic, thrown at officers. So that's what I saw. That's what I witnessed. And if people see my Instagram live, I was yelling because I saw that it was white people doing it. And I was so upset, Mike, that I use language I don't use. You know, I don't use profanity.
I don't think I've ever heard you use profanity.
You haven't, see? but I was so upset that I turned around to them and I said to them, you're going to get me killed. You're going to get black people killed because you are throwing things at these officers. You're not going to be the one who gets killed. And that's how upset I was.
And that's something that we've seen in a lot of these videos and pictures. And of course, you're only seeing snippets, so it's hard to know how representative it is. But I swear every picture I see, it's white people breaking windows or doing graffiti or things like that. And and I don't know what is in people's minds, if they, how they, is it helpful for white people to commit vandalism at these events? Let me just ask you that.
But they're not, this isn't to honor Breonna's memory. It's not to advance the cause for justice that people have been demanding. That's not what that does. And what it does is puts us in danger. We've seen that. We saw the National Guard kill Mr. McAtee. We saw that. They came to the West End to do that. They didn't go to the East End. They didn't go to the South End. They didn't go to Old Louisville. They didn't go to Butchertown. They escalated in the West End, which is exactly what I predicted would happen on Friday if white people kept up their activities. And so, but I also think it's important, Mike, for people to remember that on camera, we saw a reporter and a camera person directly being targeted by this law enforcement and shot at. And so, like, at some point, people have to respect, honor, and value the truth that we're bringing. Mm-hmm. Because, and I've said this over and over again, I would not have remained with my teenage daughter in a situation that was violent. I would not have. And I'm extremely offended at people who make that assertion as if those of us who were showing up in honor of Breonna were also instigating and escalating and participating in violence.
I want to ask you, so what is it, what are some things that white people can do to be supportive at these events or in, and in general? Because it's not, you know, it's also not, okay, we're going to go, we're going to protest, you know, we're done and things are back to normal. You know, this is, this is work that needs to continue on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Well, I will start with saying there's a whole organization in Louisville called Louisvillians Showing Up for Racial Justice. White people get connected to LSURG because they are doing what they do, centering racial justice. They have an anti-racist analysis. They're not good, moderate white people who want to show up and, you know, be present and then disappear when the action is over. These are white folks who are clear that movement building has to be sustained, that it has to follow the leadership of Black folks and other people of color, and that that has to be, that leadership has to be centered, those demands have to be centered. And they also are so good at supporting white people on their journey. So, you know, if I talk to one more white woman who said, before the 2016 election, I just wasn't paying attention to politics. And I'm like, it's such a wonderful privilege to have, because every day I walk out my door, politics hits me in the face. And so LSURG will really work with you, because you can't ask me as a Black woman to work with you and go on that journey with you. How in the world am I going to do that and address the trauma that my daughter is still dealing with after being tear gassed? Like, she's still traumatized from that experience. She's like, that has never happened to me in my life, and I don't even know what to do or say. I can't do that journey with and for you. Get with some other white people who can do that with and for you. Support Black folks who are advocating for policy change at every single level, local, state, federal. If you want to show up when Metro Council does their live feed for Metro Council meetings or committee meetings, and get in those comments and make it clear what they need to do. Same thing for us in Frankfurt. We're about to go into the interim session and those meetings are going to be virtual. Tune in, know what's happening, folks, because no one at this point, for me, it's not acceptable for anyone to say to me, I'm just not interested or engaged in politics.
Right. I always tell people, it's like, if you, you know, you don't have to vote, but if you don't vote, you're supporting the status quo. You know, that's what your vote is. Anybody who doesn't cast a vote is saying, I'm fine with everything the way it is. That's, right. You know, that's an affirmative statement towards that. You mentioned supporting policy changes. Mm-hmm. What are some specific policies that people are demanding right now? Because I think that can be a little confusing for people. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we don't like to get into the details, and that gets lost in all of this. You know, mm-hmm. we know, okay, we want this officer fired or charged, mm-hmm. or the specifics, but what are the systemic changes that can actually make this not happen again?
So there are, I do want to acknowledge and honor the local demands that are being made on behalf of Breonna Taylor's family, mm-hmm. but also the work that can happen at the state level. So locally, folks are demanding an end to no-knock warrants. We know that Mayor Fisher has suspended no-knock warrants, but I think everyone, if you went to school somewhere, you know that a suspension is temporary. That's not permanent, right? So people are advocating for the end to no-knock warrants, period. People definitely want the Civilian Review Board to have subpoena power. If it doesn't have subpoena power, it's pointless. It's a bunch of people meeting up and hanging out together and talking about, you know, how there are some bad cops and good cops. Those two things have got to be centered. But we also have to have a conversation about how we fund, how much of the city's budget goes to funding police, and how militarized the police force is. Those are policy decisions.
It's about 2/3 of the city budget that goes to the police department, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. That's right. So while people need, we're in the midst of COVID-19, we're saying to people, or we've said, and if we have this second wave that folks are talking about, we're gonna say again, to shelter at home. Well, we can't do that if people are homeless or they have inadequate housing. So we need some of that money for affordable housing, for example. We need it for public transportation so people can get to work. But yet it's being invested into a militarized law enforcement department that is attacking its people. At the state level, I just want to lift up a couple of things that I think people could really be a part of helping to advance. And that is, for the third year in a row, I'll be filing legislation to have independent investigations of not only police shootings, but violent interactions with police. And so that was brought to me by Sam Aguiar, who is an attorney working on Breonna's case. But this was after Darnell Wicker, a military veteran, was shot and killed by police. So people, please support that legislation, because police can't investigate police. I know some people are clapping their hands and saying, you know, thank you, Governor, for saying you're going to have an investigation into the shooting of Mr. McAtee, but law enforcement can't investigate law enforcement. That's just not possible.
The Civilian Review Board is really important, because if I remember correctly, you know, they'll have the ability to investigate any complaint, or at least a wide range of complaints that people could bring to them, because so often we talk about all these things after there's been a death. Mm-hmm. And we say, oh, you know, this guy, and I think it was Michael Newby many mm-hmm. years ago, the guy that was the officer that killed him had a nickname like Mad Dog.
Yes.
Or something like that. And it's like, you know, I don't want to read too much of the nickname, but it was like there was a big history here of like, okay, mm-hmm. this could have been prevented, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's no mechanism for people to make those complaints. And then a civilian mm-hmm. review board could potentially see, oh, this person has had 15 complaints about them in traffic stops. And mm-hmm. if we can correct that before it gets to a death, mm. I mean, that shouldn't, you know, this is all possible.
That's right. And the Civilian Review Board should be full of civilians. Mm-hmm. Like the task force that the mayor has created is so heavily weighted toward the city, current and former city officials and law enforcement, that, you know, it's hard for people in community to trust that it's going to come out with something that really is about community. So this Civilian Review Board should be majority people who don't have a position or title that's elected or appointed. They should be people who are deeply rooted in community and care about real transformation.
So let me ask you this also, in terms of policy as well. You know, every couple of years is a new phrase that's going around, you know, stop and frisk or community oriented policing. And we'll hear a lot about it for a while and it'll be good or it'll be bad. And then it'll kind of disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, are there some specific practices like that that need to be taken out or need to be brought in?
So one of the things that I started looking at after Ahmaud Arbery was murdered is Kentucky Stand Your Ground law. So I posted about that, and so many people didn't even know we had a Stand Your Ground law in Kentucky. So I'm looking at repealing that Stand Your Ground law. And though that's something that has been somewhat of a buzzword since Trayvon Martin was murdered. And so, you know, we haven't really done the work we needed to do in Kentucky to look at that legislation and say, whoa, wait a minute. We don't need to create these wannabe police officers who think that they're deputized, although they're not, to act recklessly, right? So that's one of the things that I'm looking at. And I really hope to get people support behind it because, like you said, we want things to be seriously transformed to the point that we don't have to find ourselves back here again. Right. And so we've got to do that with policy change.
So, and I don't know, maybe I don't want to get too, I don't want to be too invasive, but I just want to ask you, how terrifying is it to be a Black mother in Louisville, Kentucky, USA?
I've cried all weekend. I don't know what I can do to keep my children safe. My son is 24. My daughter's a teenager and I couldn't keep her safe on Friday. So my position and title meant nothing when it came down to it. So, you know, I just, every day it's more tears that I didn't know were there. So, but I'm so hopeful that her generation will be much wiser than the generations that came before hers, including mine. Yesterday when I was in St. Matthews, the East End part of District 41, and you know, hundreds of folks were out showing up for Breonna, it was beautiful. And it was also predictable that law enforcement would take a step back approach. That was so predictable. Just about everyone there said it. They knew it. Even people who were from the St. Matthews area knew it and said it. And we saw it within the same, you know, 12-hour period. We saw law enforcement come to the West End with real actual bullets and kill someone. When we were all like, whoa, we thought those, you were doing like little fake pellets. What happened? You know, but pepper packs, what happened? When did we escalate to bullets? When did that happen?
What are the pieces that get left out of these conversations? Because, you know, we were talking before about how we've been at protests for 20 years, protesting the same thing. You know, you were talking about marching around the police station. And I, you know, remember doing that with Reverend Coleman. And, you know, I mean, we've been having the same fight. We've been having the same struggles for, I've been in it 20 years. It's been going on a whole lot longer than that, you know, and it gets to a fever pitch. We all talk about it. We heal, we reconcile, and everything goes right back to normal or goes, I shouldn't call it normal. It goes back to what it has been. You know, how do we break out of that? Is there a piece that's missing that doesn't get heard?
I have to say, I feel like this time is different. Because I'm seeing people who aren't going to go back to the political establishment or status quo. I'm seeing people who could care less about those things. That's not important to them. I think historically there have been far too many people who were more concerned with being called to the mayor's office or the governor's mansion and being close, you know, having proximity to political power, that they were willing to acquiesce to some things. That's not happening now. These are folks out in the streets who don't care what your position or title is, and they don't want to be close to you politically. That's not relevant for them. The other thing I will say, Mike, is that I don't think we ever really healed from anything, whether it was the enslavement of African people or the civil rights movement. I don't think we've ever really healed from anything. And my fear right now is that I don't think we're not going back to anything the way it was. We're just not. I don't see that happening. But I want to make sure that people get the emotional and mental and spiritual support that they need, because this is traumatic, extremely traumatic. And for people who've been out for the first time protesting, who walked away, thank goodness they were able to walk away, who came in naive, thinking, some people did come in naive thinking, oh, the police would never do something like this. They would never hurt a whole bunch of people. And they walked away realizing that they will. And so I think that different perspective is going to change the way that we operate in the future.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I feel like, you know, we keep seeing what looks like maybe it's going to be rock bottom and we find a way to go a little further down. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like this is different. It does feel, and maybe it's this younger generation, or it's everybody being cooped up under COVID and already under all the stress and strains on the system. You know, maybe this is enough to where we can finally make the the painful changes that are going to need to be made. And I think that's part of this that we don't want to recognize, or white people don't want to recognize, is that we're going to have to make some changes that are going to be real. You know, yes. We really have to trust and empower Black people in very significant ways that are going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And until we do that, we're never going to get past it.
That's right. That's right. And we're not going to be a better community. Like a community is strong when everyone can thrive. Right. When people who want to participate fully can participate fully. But we are seeing the results of a society that has decided we're going to exclude some people and make sure you don't have opportunities to thrive, and that you're, not included, and that there's little to no development in your neighborhoods. And so we're going to create this environment where you feel like the other when you're supposed to be part of the whole.
And we suffer. Yeah, we suffer because we're denying some of the potentially the best talent in our own community. I think about Muhammad Ali. You know, everybody in Louisville loves to talk about him. Mm-hmm. And you read his biography and it's like, I have this feeling that he's the kind of guy that would have been top of his field at whatever he did. He would have been amazing, just kind of one in a million. And, you know, he ended up being a boxer because he had very few career paths open to him as an African-American living in Louisville at the time. You know, he might have been the guy that could have cured cancer if he'd been able to go to medical school or something. And I don't say this in any way, of course, to diminish his amazing accomplishments, right. But how many people are there in the community that we are denying the ability to live up to their full potential, and we all suffer as a result?
That's right. Well, Mike, I have to say I was out today at 26 and Broadway, because that's also in District 41. And the point you're making is what I saw. I saw young Black men who were in leadership, who immediately took over and said, okay, we're going to figure out how we keep people safe from the police who are across the street, but we're also going to make it clear to the police that we're going to hold you accountable. We're going to figure out how we can get water and food to people. Like, they were just coming in and just figuring it out. Folks who are living in West Louisville and, own their community. And I kept saying that those are leaders. Those are the folks we need right now.
And they're on the defensive. They're being forced to, do nothing more with those skills than defend their lives and their community instead of being nurtured and empowered and able to actually lead us forward.
Instead of being invited to be part of the mayor's task force to figure out where do we go from here, or hopefully they'll be invited to be part of the Civilian Review Board. Those are the voices and experiences we need, because they're the people who are respected in their community. And they're the folks closest to community who can come back with the thoughts and ideas from people who feel disconnected to government.
But if we bring them into the meeting in the mayor's office, they're going to speak uncomfortable truths that nobody in that room wants to hear, right?
That's fine. That's fine. If you're not uncomfortable, then I don't think that you're going to really do the best you can do for people. If we just continue to allow elected officials, and I'm including myself, to feel comfortable in doing just the bare minimum, then nothing will ever change. So that's fine. You will be uncomfortable, and we're going to move forward, and we're going to get done what we need to get done.
I think that's a big part of it, is if we only are including, you know, the people in the nonprofit world and the elected officials and the business leaders and all, mm-hmm. and none of these people are bad people.
Right.
But if we're not including community voices,
mm-hmm.
you know, who are close to the problem, living the problem,
mm-hmm.
then they're not going to settle for what somebody who's separated from the problem might be willing to settle for.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's perfect. I mean, that is the way forward. The way forward is to be together in community. And we don't need to go to the mayor's office. We shouldn't even go to the mayor's office because you got to park to get there anyway, or pay to park if you drive anyway. So come out to the community. You were willing to send out law enforcement to the West End to start instigating and escalating. Well, you come out here, and that's where the meeting takes place. It doesn't need to take place in your office.
Absolutely. And there's plenty of places, and they know, they clearly know how to get there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can go on, and we can get ourselves both into real trouble, probably. So thank you very much for joining me today. And I'm sure we'll probably talk more about this. We're going to be bringing on other people and just, you know, trying to help people understand what's going on and how they can help. So yes. Thank you very much, Representative Attica Scott, for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much, my friend. And I really appreciate the work of the Louisville Pride Foundation.
Thank you.